by the penal code. Pens and Wright, in their most upbeat essay in the book, Prison Legal News Top 10 Non-Frivolous Prisoner Lawsuits, notes that between 1992 and 1995, all five of the prison cases that were heard by the U.S. Supreme Court, several of which the Supreme Court ruled in the prisoner's favor, were begun as suits filed by prisoners without the assistance of a lawyer. They summarize from a single year of PLN 10 prisoner-initiated suits that won, including a federal court ruling against 27 New York correctional officers for beating prisoners over a six-year period, and a District of Columbia case that found prison officials liable for the systematic sexual harassment, rape, sodomy, assaults, insults, and other abuses by prison staff of women prisoners. There is a final source of information on prisons which is not sufficiently appreciated, and worse, not in sufficient supply, prison staff and administrators. In their account of the draconian Florence, Arizona maximum security prison, much like California's Pelican Bay, O'Neill Staff and Dan Pins note that some ranking staff have resigned in protest of the barbaric and cruel policies being implemented. In California, Corcoran's SHU staff, most visibly Lieutenant Steve Rigg, Lieutenant Bob Talbot, and Officer Richard Caruso, felt they had no other option than to approach the local FBI directly about cover-ups at the most violent prison in the United States. Violence has been reduced as a consequence, but Rigg and Caruso are now pariahs to the California Prison Guards Union for breaking the code of silence and are struggling to find other careers. In the Pelican Bay Factor, Abdul Alukbala Shakur, a prisoner in isolation in the Pelican Bay SHU, focuses on the Corcoran Security Housing Unit. Since Shakur wrote his essay, 8 SHU guards have been indicted by U.S. attorneys after a several years long FBI investigation. Recently, the FBI opened investigations into guard corruption and violence at Pelican Bay and Susanville prisons. From 1989 through 1994, more prisoners were wounded and killed by guards at Corcoran than any prison in the United States. Virtually all this violence happened in the SHU, the security housing units, containing less than half the prison's total population. The politically powerful union representing California prisons, the CCPOA, in its article in its April magazine, The Peacekeeper, warned its 27,000 members to give careful thought as to whether to talk to FBI agents. The agents, CCPOA warns, are engaged in a game of deceit to lure innocent, non-suspecting prison guards into indictments by U.S. attorneys described as, quote, employing a strategy of high-profile sensationalism. Union leadership stoking a campaign to taint the FBI as criminal lovers informed the membership that the FBI now believes prisoners, not guards. I believe the real concern behind the union leadership advisory to the troops is not fellow traveling FBI agents with ears to prisoner mouths. The real anxiety is that guards keep their mouths shut. Nevertheless, the FBI, the public at large, correctional officers, prosecutors, and defense attorneys will all find that Penns, Wright, and Burton Rose have assembled a fine collection and that seeks to persuade with evidence and argument. And this is an article and a review of the book by Thomas Quinn, private investigator, who recently made the documentary video Maximum Security University about abuses at Corcoran Prison's security housing unit. The author dedicates this review to Ron Ridenhour, the soldier who broke the story of the My Lai massacre, who died in Louisiana recently at the age of 51. Again, this is in the September 23rd issue of the Anderson Valley Advertiser, which you can buy at the Book Loft right next to the Rio Theater. This has been Bathrobe Spears Broadsides, the Sunday edition. We'll be returning on Thursday at 6 o'clock with another edition of Bathrobe Spears Broadsides. We're going to go out on a little bit of music from Carol Denny. And I want to invite you to join our next talk show host, who's actually here in the studio. She's got a broader audience in mind. She's going to include the young at heart as well as the old geezers like myself. Is that right? That's right. She's nodding. So come on down to the Police Review Board meeting tomorrow if you want. Check out the SCAN meeting. Check out City Council meetings on Tuesday, and come to Sean Alimi's hearing at 8:15 on Tuesday morning in court. And do join us for Bathrobe Spears Broadsides when we resume on Thursday at 6. Thanks for being with us. Any questions, off-air, call 423-HUFF, 423-4833.
Plight. freight train is on its way, and on the tracks our bodies lay.
Oh, soul and mio, I've been misused. The matrix cops, they stole my shoes. Now hunger and cold are all I know, and Rush Limbaugh on the radio. Candles burn down right to the wick. It's been so long since I've seen the sun. In my final hour, I pick up a gun.
Broadsides on 96.3 FM, Free Radio Santa Cruz, your Thursday night civil rights show from 6 to 8. Tonight, special call-in subject, what do you want from your city council candidates other than that they should all leave town? Call in to 427-3772 with updates on this, that, and everything else on the streets and in the suites of Santa Cruz and parts north and south.
Around the clock, Einstein, James Dean, looking at a woman. and on and on and on. And how are you tonight? It's beautiful Thursday night, October, what is it, 15th already? Free Radio Santa Cruz is what you're listening to, 96.3 FM. I want to make sure I got my levels right here. Boy, we've got a boom boom in the studio. Hey, and a ding ding on the phone. Let's see what's cooking out there in your side of the phone line.
Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Yeah, so how are we going to go about rephasing this whole city council thing? Well, are we going to bump out the magnificent, how many, seven?
Yeah, there's a bunch of them in there.
So what are we going to, how are we going to reface this? How are we going to get the Santa Cruzians into the council?
Well, that's a very good question. I guess at the ballot box.
Yeah?
Yeah, we got three choices, really. We got three seats up for election on November 3rd.
Well, what's the lesser of the evils.
So what's your opinion, caller? You've been looking over the candidates?
I haven't really been. I haven't had the time to. I haven't even watched TV much, so I don't know if they're putting anything on the TV. I've been in my neighborhood, though, the signs are popping up. So.
Uh-huh.
So I'm just wondering what you're thinking would be the...
My take?
Yeah.
Well, you know,
I'll let you go. I'll listen to you, but I'll just to hear your talk.
Sure, and call back if you have any thoughts.
I sure will.
Okay.
Well, we actually have talk radio here. I want to thank you, caller, for starting off the two-hour period with a real phone call. That's great. Well, my thoughts, for those of you who have been listening to the show, and it's a twice-weekly show, once at 6 in the evening and once at 11 in the morning on Sunday, I kind of don't like any of the candidates that much, but I think three of them are probably likely to hold the line on some issues and maybe make some changes on others, and the three of them are for sure poisonous. The three that I think we should think about are, maybe even four, are Crone, Sugar, and Fitzmaurice. Those are the kind of the slate, the so-called progressive slate. You might think this is the same bunch of clowns that's in there already, but there's been a split in the council, and that split is very important. We've got a caller here, hang on.
Hi there, you're on the line with Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Good evening, Robert.
Hi there.
Vicious V-Man. I had a question for you. What do you know about Pat Clark, and what do you think about Pat Clark?
Well, you know, my knowledge of Pat Clark is very limited. I remember that the NAACP that he's been working with has always kind of been this group of staid, middle-class black folks or African-Americans who don't seem to be too much into rights for poor people, even though one would think that in many areas the poor people are predominantly people of color, whether black or Hispanic.
And Latin American.
And Latin American, yeah, exactly.
I had something to point out. Do you know Pat Clark was formerly a homeless man?
That's correct. He was a homeless man. He actually works a very grassroots kind of job as a janitor. I think he's up at UCSC. In his favor, it has to be said that he is a person who came out earliest in terms of active campaigning against the sleeping ban. When we had the sleeping ban initiative, we were trying to get it on the ballot. He hosted the benefit at the Vets Hall last, I guess it was April or May. So that all can be said in his favor. He's a nice guy, no question about it.
I think something else in his favor, and I'll leave you with this, is
sure.
that he is running a campaign with the least amount of contribution dollars, and I think that is to
$700, that's
yeah.
right.
All right, thanks.
Yeah, sure.
Bye-bye.
Thank you, Vinny.
And these are considerations we get from the V-Man, and certainly campaign contributions in our money buys all kind of scene that usually crops up around the political race is really important. I didn't give you the downside of Pat. The downside of Pat is that he doesn't have really a program, a set of policies, a series of goals, specifics that I really need to see when candidates are talking. I mean, when I vote in the elections, I usually don't even want to vote for candidates because they're usually so full of bullshit, or you don't know what they're going to do next, or they're all like Tweedledee, Tweedledum type big corporate candidates. But I do vote for initiatives, for instance, because when you vote for an initiative, you know you're either voting for or against very specific policies, whether it's Proposition 215 that grants to caregivers the right to use medical marijuana and pass it on to those that they're giving care to. Very important, vital thing that's being gutted by court decisions. We're going to talk about that later in the show. Initiatives are very important, and if candidates really mean what they say, and express clear differences on policies, then we need to consider that when we're voting, and even consider voting for some of these candidates. At the local level, we don't have Democrats and Republicans running as candidates. We have people talking about specific city council policies, and that's what the first caller was asking about. Why do I support him? Well, the reason I mentioned Crone, Sugar, and Fitzmaurice, and to some extent Clark, is because they have separated themselves from what I call the renegade Ratkin redevelopment majority, which runs the Santa Cruz City Council, which I believe is still poised to give us huge, obscene developments in the beach flats that would remove scores of people who are poor, that would gridlock traffic, that would tie up redevelopment money, all pretty much for the benefit of one company, the Seaside Company. And there are those who say, hey, the city council last Tuesday, you know, came up with a wonderful compromise, and even Celia Scott and Catherine Byers jumped on board, and what am I so concerned about? They voted 7-0 for a scale-back plan. They threw out the Third Street realignment. They threw out the expansion of the beach boardwalk. They threw out the increased commercial development. All they had left in was La Bahia, the hotel development. You know, am I such a anti-development guy that I don't want to see an economic engine, as Scott Kennedy puts it, helping to bring in tourist dollars that will eventually benefit in tax form lower-income people and people needing social services, as Ratkin Kennedy endlessly proclaimed. That's their constant refrain with these kinds of developments. Oh, it's all for poor people because, hey, you know, it brings in tax dollars. Yeah, it also brings in new people to build more developments to push out poor people, of course, is with the underside of all this that you don't hear about. It's like at Terrace Point, where they dazzle and they kind of dangle in front of you this little trinket of a marine research facility, but they really want fancy houses and redevelopment there. They are using that as bait and as cover. And bait and cover, or switch and cover, or switch and bait, or bait and switch, there we go, is what we have happening with City Council with the beach boardwalk. And actually, I gave a speech about that subject, I'm proud to say. Gave a speech on Tuesday to City Council, and I wasn't able to complete it. I'm going to read that shortly, because again, that's, I think, substantive and important. But again, I want to keep the show to some extent focused on, and encourage you to focus on, the council candidates. Who's running for City Council? Rod Quartararo, Charlie Canfield's banker, Linda Steinau, the Downtown Association Duchess, Jane Walton, or Whoops-a-Daisy Walton, as I call her, for her endless gaffes. You've got the three so-called progressive candidates, Crone, Fitzmaurice, and Sugar, who I will design names for in due time, I'll tell you, and Pat Clark, and then I think Rodent has pretty much stepped away from the plate, though his name is still on the ballot. That kind of completes the roster of candidates that we've got. You can vote for three. You can vote for three on November 3rd, or you can actually, if you're not going to be here on the 3rd, you can vote for three at another time, earlier, by getting an absentee ballot. And I think you should vote. I think you should vote not because I have endless faith in Crone, Fitzmaurice, and Sugar, but because I believe that if you don't vote for them, you're really going to get screwed. I mean, we're probably going to get screwed with them anyway. That could well happen. I talked to Fitzmaurice for 45 minutes on the phone today about police abuse, and, well, more about what to do about Citizens Police Review Board, which may have been kind of a waste of time to talk about, since the Citizens Police Review Board is not only a bad joke, it's an old, tired, bad joke. But I thought it was important to give him my thoughts on it, and he patiently listened and gave his thoughts, and we also talked a bit about the sleeping ban. I've been concerned about the three candidates that I had thought really had come down clearly against this vicious sleeping ban law, which almost everybody listening to my voice probably knows about, since Free Radio Santa Cruz is a knowledgeable group on this issue, surely, because I've been talking about it nonstop for 4 years, actually for 10 years, but for the 3 or 4 years I've been on the air on Free Radio Santa Cruz, you haven't heard much. Well, you haven't heard a show where I probably haven't mentioned the sleeping ban and denounced it. But for those newcomers, that's the law. The city council can change by 4 votes, 4-3. That's it. 7 members on the council, a majority changes the law. That currently makes it illegal for homeless people anyone to sleep outside or in a vehicle anywhere in the city of Santa Cruz, even on private property, except for a fenced-in side yard or backyard, except for three vehicles on church property with the permission of the church, or except for very rare, almost non-existent circumstances. In fact, I've never heard of the city granting a permit for permitted camping. There's a whole section that allows that. It's largely, though, kind of tinsel and subterfuge, which they can point to say, hey, see, we have a process here that they never use, but they have a process. So it's illegal for you to sleep in Santa Cruz if you're poor, and that affects 500 to 1,500 people because the so-called emergency shelter program, the ISSP program, only has spaces for less than 30 in the summer, and if we're generous, less than 200 if the armory is included in the winter months. We're not in the winter yet, though it feels like it, and certainly felt like it this morning. And that means that 95 or more percent of people outside faced harassment, tickets, jail, the midnight knock at their van or at their campsite for sleeping and doing what every one of us without exception out there has to do, which is sleep at night. And there's just no way around that basic human rights violation, and that's why a lot of folks got together last year and started working on the Sleeping Ban Repeal Initiative, which didn't really take the camping ban out. The camping ban would still be in under that repeal, which fell short in the number of votes, but simply said that you can't simply arrest someone for sleeping. Instead, it said that you could set up, the city council could bar sleeping in residential areas of the city on public property if they wanted, but if that were the case, then if someone were caught sleeping, then they would be simply told they had to move or face a ticket to a legal area, to an area where sleeping is legal. Currently, there are no such areas, period. So when they come along, the cop doesn't just tell you to move, because there's nowhere to move to. Now, technically speaking, that's not really true. In theory, you could move outside the city limits, to areas that are more remote, to areas where you'd be less likely to be found, to areas where theoretically there is no ban in effect. However, sheriff's deputies misinform people in the county that they cannot sleep anywhere legally except in so-called campground areas, except in campgrounds and state parks. That's a lie. There is a specific roadside resting exemption which says you can sleep, period, on by the side of the road, if you're tired for several hours. And there's also the reality of the county law is that if you fall asleep in 98% of the county, that is, on public property, that's not per se illegal. Only in the very limited, specifically designated no camping zones, of which there are four, including Paso Tiempo, Tanner Heights, and a few others that are kind of close to the city and kind of fancy residential neighborhoods where they specifically got together, held public hearings, and declared them no camping zones to drive out homeless people from those areas. So what I'm saying is there's no place for people to go. And this issue has been a key one, or certainly one that's come up in every single city council race for the last decade. And it's kind of now being pushed off into the side, because really for the last year, because of the good work of people involved in the committee to repeal the sleeping ban, it's become generally accepted that it is a basic human right to be able to sleep at night. And there has to be some change that at least allows people an opportunity to sleep somewhere legally, not necessarily, on your front door, in front of a business, in front of a property, but somewhere. And so we said anywhere in the city that's a non-residential zone, it shall not be illegal per se to sleep or cover up with blankets. And we asked the council candidates to endorse this very mild provision, very mild. It doesn't say that people are allowed to, pitch a tent or warm themselves with a fire or have any kind of, real significant survival gear in the winter, ground claws, anything like that. No, just that it would not be illegal to cover yourself with a blanket. It would not be illegal to actually close your eyes and fall asleep, because that's something we all have to do. Well, the candidates agreed. Four of them. Pat Clark agreed as early as May, as one caller was pointing out, or as I pointed out to one caller. He agreed when he emceed our Vets Hall benefit, seeking to raise funding for the initiative to repeal the sleeping ban. Three others, Crone, Fitzmaurice, and Sugar, agreed July and August when we brought this issue to them.
there was a little bit of, you know, initial kind of hedging, and they talked about homeless services and so forth, but they agreed. But then, about 2 weeks ago, I heard they started backpedaling. Sugar started saying, well, he said, I want more beds, and we can get beds for everybody. That's going to be my first priority. After we get the beds, we'll worry about the band. We can get the beds. Well, of course, that's horseshit, in very simple words. And I'm sorry to be so colorful in my language, but anyway, I'm not, because that's exactly what it is. This has been the line of every candidate who has been sort of in with the main line, please the West Side, but trash the poor kind of policies that has been the hallmark of elections, local elections, in terms of mainline candidates since 1988 and probably before. I was here sporadically. I wasn't usually here in election time before 88, but I was here for every election 88 and beyond. And they will tell you, we want affordable housing. It's not good enough for those homeless to be able to sleep outside. We want them to have affordable housing. But in the meantime, arrest them for sleeping is, of course, the unspoken coda that they don't add to that statement. And it's vicious. It's vicious, it's deceptive, it's self-deceptive, and it makes me ill to hear it. And it makes me particularly upset to hear it from candidates who know better. So anyway, Sugar was backpedaling and saying, first he talked about getting shelter beds for everybody. Not even affordable housing, mind you, but shelter beds, that's for 500 to 1,500 people. Give me a break. Not going to happen. Certainly not going to happen in the foreseeable future. So I said, until that happens, do you support ending the sleeping ban? Well, I'll look at it. No, I'm afraid Linda Steinau and Jane Walton, the downtown business darlings, say exactly the same thing. They say, I'll look at it. They look at it, and then they look away, and then they go back to their own beds, and they sleep well, and they have no problems. That's the fundamental moral sickness in our society. Fitzmaurice talked about building a consensus. We want to build, I will work with the voters, I will work with people to build a consensus about a solution to this problem. Well, it's no big mystery. There's no solution to the problem. The problem is many-layered in terms of homelessness. But the immediate solution to arresting people is to eliminate the law that you're arresting them under. That seems to me to be pretty clear. It seemed clear to the 3,200 signatures that we got on the sleeping ban petitions. I think it was more, actually, from city voters. It's clear to anybody of average or even below average intelligence, but it doesn't seem to be clear to the pack of politicians that's running with progressives stamped across their chests. That doesn't seem to be too clear. Similarly with Chris Krohn, the man who I stood side by side with in the Beach Flats hearings, standing up and opposing the Rotkin machine that was trying to bulldoze the Beach Flats residents, and I'm glad I did, and I'm glad he did, and I'm glad all these candidates did. They had a fine job in Beach Flats, no question. But when it comes to the rest of the poor people in Santa Cruz, they can't seem to just get it together to make a kind of an elementary statement. They did initially, but then people like Jillian Greenside and other West Side liberals apparently got to them and started telling them things like, well, you know, we don't want you to accept this sleeping ban. They could be sleeping in our neighborhoods. They could be sleeping here. They could be sleeping there. They could be sleeping anywhere. I don't know what Jillian said. I know that she has a right to her opinion. But I trusted these three men to keep their basic position the same as it was, without, unless they had some real good reason to change. Instead, they started backpedaling and hedging because there are some progressives, like Mayor Marty Wormhout, for instance, when she was mayor, now Supervisor Marty Wormhout, who would actually have homeless people arrested. She had Freeheart Fran Rizzo arrested because Fran slept on her doorstep on February of 1989, on the coldest evening of the year, seeking blankets for homeless people. She had Fran arrested for trespass. This is the mayor of Santa Cruz, the same woman who arrested people, of course, for serving free food to the homeless, and has never apologized. You know, Marty may be a fine woman on the Beach Flats. She may be doing great things on medical marijuana, though I haven't heard too much recently. But I'll tell you, I've never heard an apology from this supervisor for her vicious attack on the homeless as mayor, and I've never seen her come around on that issue. And I think I have to continue to raise it until I hear that apology. I need that apology, because the arrogance that people assume when they get into positions of power is something frightening to behold. Frightening to behold. That's what you see. And I'm afraid we're beginning to see that same kind of distant arrogance. I tried to talk to these three candidates last night. There was a forum at the De Anza Trailer Park. talking about substantive issues, and you're going to hear some of the comments they made, and they were good comments. They supported the De Anza Park trailer residents seeking rent control there, and talked about the need for rent control more broadly in Santa Cruz, and it talked about you can't just give up and go home now that there's this bogus compromise. They didn't use those words, that's mine, on the beach boardwalk has been reached, and now that the Bombay Company giveaway has been postponed until after the election, and maybe Terrace Point will be postponed. They're going to postpone it all so they can slip in one vote. We're talking about they being the current city council. They want to elect one of those three people. They want to elect one of Quartararo, Steinau, and Walton. If they get that third vote, the fourth vote there, they can continue exactly what they've been doing for the last 2 years, for the last 6 or 8 years, actually, since the earthquake. But certainly intensely since the last 2 years. This redevelopment mania that completely ignores public comment, bulldozes and steamrolls over community feeling and community input. Anyway, so I think we need to raise these questions at the forums. You need to call the candidates. You need to call Crone, Fitzmaurice, and Sugar. And I can, and later in the show, I will try to find and give you their numbers. You need to call them up and tell them, want you to come out in favor of ending the sleeping ban, period. Don't want to hear any ifs, ands, or buts. You should definitely go further. You know, you should scrap the downtown ordinances that make it illegal to sit down off to the side and make it illegal to peacefully ask for spare change at night. You should scrap the curfews against the young and against people walking along the riverside. There are all kinds of things that need to be done. But if you can't even have enough moral direction, compass, I don't know what it is, basic sense of what's right and wrong, to know that it should be no question people should be allowed to sleep at night, then you don't belong in office. Then it's best not to vote for any of you at all. And I say this reluctantly, but it's true. I mean, I think that, you know, even I'll probably hold my nose and vote for these three on election day anyway. But I don't like what I'm hearing, and they need to hear from you otherwise. And we would also like to hear from you. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM at 427-3772. If you want to give us a call, maybe I'm ranting on too long here. Maybe I need to be set straight. I mean, tell me, am I just babbling away about issues you've heard many times before or couldn't care less about? What do you think of these candidates, Crone, Fitzmaurice, Sugar, Clark, Walton, Quartararo, Steinau? These are the people that are going to be running your city for the next 2 years, along with the gruesome threesome, the gruesome threesome, Rotkin, Hernandez, and Matthews, and what a crew they are. Plus Byers. She's, of course, better than those three, but I call her Birdseed Byers because she hasn't been enough, unfortunately, but she's kind of timid when she's there alone. She's losing Mayor Celia Scott, who's decided not to run. So if anything is going to happen, three progressives have to win as a slate, all three, which is going to be a very, very hard thing to do. Let's all think about that as we chew down on this next piece of Peter, Paul, and Mary nostalgia.
First of all, I would like to say a word or two. I know you won't be thinking this applies to you, but it's true, and it do. All your life thank you for the word or two spoken in the moments when I needed you to see me through and the
song is love, and you're tuned still and always to Free Radio Santa Cruz. That's 96.3 FM. You can catch Free Radio's voicemail if you'd like to be on the air yourself, or if you have a public service announcement for us, at 427-4523. Make a message of 2 or 3 minutes. I'll be happy to play it for you if it concerns some public event, for instance. The email address for Free Radio Santa Cruz is frsc@cruzio.com. Snail mail is P.O. Box 7507, Santa Cruz 95061. And, of course, the call-in line, if you want to join this show and address yourself to the question, what are these candidates worth, if anything, what can we do, is 427-3772. I've been putting a lot of energy into this election race, mostly to oppose the bad candidates, not so much to support the good ones, because I'm worried that Chamber of Commerce money is going to elect one of those three turkeys, Walton, Steino, and Quartararo. I wrote a flyer yesterday, which I distributed at the Danza Trailer Park Association Forum, called The Rotkin Council, 2 More Years. And I said, if just one of the Walton Steino Quartararo redevelopment happy crew gets elected November 3rd, Rotkin, Hernandez, and Matthews will have their fourth vote. Rotkin needs just one vote to retain city council control, to bring back the 3rd Street realignment, to ratify the Rivermouth Tidelands giveaway, to push the boardwalk expansion, to sell out the beach flats poor, to give us another gateway nightmare, to mess up Mission Street, to gut the Greenbelt with Bombay sell-offs, to pave over Terrace Point, to punish the homeless for sleeping, to rubber stamp police shootings, to ignore public input and impose their agenda. Enough arrogance and double talk. Endorse real progressives this time. I didn't say who they were. Any one of the 4, Clark, Crown, Fitzmaurice, and Sugar, are a good start. Actually, that's all you got this time. There was also a rally last night against hate crimes, the vicious beating to death of the man in Wyoming, the gay man, the gay youth. Drew a lot of people to the town clock. I got there briefly. I was there for about 20 minutes between 10 to 7 and 7:15. I was rushing to this other forum, this trailer park forum I mentioned to you, where the city council candidates were debating. And I issued a flyer called Hate Crimes Against the Homeless, Official Santa Cruz Policy. Because while everybody was mourning and denouncing gay bashing in Wyoming, they weren't talking about the kinds of hate crimes I'm concerned about locally that people can really do something about. In fact, they had some of the biggest hate criminals as their guests of honor. I refer to Chief Steve Belcher of the Santa Cruz Police Department and Sheriff Mark Tracy, Sheriff of our county. Why do I call these individuals hate criminals? Because of their policies, because of the people they appoint to cover the hate crime scene, because of their policies toward the homeless. And I talked about the Santa Cruz City sleeping ban as being a hate crime of itself, in terms of not just directly punishing what people can't but do every night, which is sleep, we've talked about that, but also putting people in vulnerable positions, women, gay people, people who are vulnerable because of their physical size. They can't openly get together and sleep in an encampment or in an area that they might support each other or might be better policed, because they have to worry about getting $162 tickets that turn into $272 warrants if they don't go to court. So they hide, and when they hide, it makes them vulnerable to what's called troll busting, attacks by bigots like the Cretans who beat to death that Wyoming man. We don't hear anything about this, about the sheriff or the police chief or the city council members or the mayor wanting to change this publicly. They don't want to talk about that. It doesn't seem to them to be politically appropriate, so they don't talk about that. But I think it's important to talk about. It's also important to talk about the people that they are using in the so-called positions of looking over hate crimes. For instance, the head of the sheriff's hate crimes unit is Deputy James Thurber. And we've talked about this in the year before, but what I write in the flyer is that Thurber assaulted and then falsely charged homeless activist Pat Ring on June 19, 1996, in plain view of everybody in front of the court. Ring was later found not guilty of all charges, and the last charge was hung. They accused him of assault after Thurber went out of the courtroom to assault him. This is one of the activists who, through his persistence, brought to public attention at the City Hall Sleepers Vigil in 1996 in front of the City Hall the incredible hate crime that the city, under Mayor Mike Rutkin, was doing and is still doing under Mayor Celia Scott, arresting homeless people at night who have no place to go, stealing their blankets, stealing their gear, terrorizing them in the dead of night because of their status, because they are homeless. Very simple, very vicious, but very true. This is the sheriff's man, James Thurber, head of his hate unit, assaulted then falsely charged homeless activist Patrick Lancelin. And that was in October of 1996. He was set upon by this man, Thurber. Thurber has harassed youth at the Rancho Del Mar Shopping Center. We've actually had lots of interviews with Jerry Henry and Richard Quigley and the people that he assaulted, the young people that he harassed at the Aptos Shopping Center. This again, Deputy James Thurber. He unlawfully arrested a Santa Cruz man at Christmas dinner with his family. Some sort of probation thing involving marijuana, and seemed to be very pleased with himself, according to reports. It's Christmas of 97. He harassed witnesses at a trial of one of the young people that he was harassing at the Aptos Shopping Center, where the young person was found not guilty, but he harassed the parents of that young person's friend in the hallway outside the trial. I got that directly from witnesses and from the woman herself. This is James Thurber. This is the nephew of the great writer James Thurber, strangely enough, the man who wrote many, many wonderful books. He was a blind writer. Used to hear him when I was a kid. My mom used to read James Thurber to me. This is his nephew. How the great have fallen. I think that the real Thurber would roll over in his grave to know that this guy, this hate criminal, heads the hate crimes unit. For the SCPD, we have Officer Rick Martinez, Santa Cruz Police Department Chief Belcher's liaison of the local anti-hate crimes group, the Peace Builders. This is a guy who, according to David Silva, drove a homeless man from Santa Cruz by threatening to take away his dog if he panhandled at Lucky's. The homeless man, sober, polite, and drug-free when he was scared out of town, returned from San Jose months later, ruined, confused, and lost, with needle tracks all over his arms. Again, the source of that is David Silva, who's with the Client Advisory Council for the HIV community. And Silva's oral complaints about this issue and this man, Officer Rick Martinez, to the City Council, the Citizens Police Review Board, and Mayor Celia Scott were all ignored. So it's nice to have a celebration and a getting together and a candlelight vigil, but if you're having as your spokespeople and as your leaders and as your comforters the very people who are suborning hate criminals in positions of power, something is really, really wrong. Disagree with me on this, or if you have additional information to add, please give me a call at 427-3772. You're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz 96.3. My name is Robert Norse. The show you're listening to is Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides at 96.3 FM, Free Radio Santa Cruz. I also pointed out in this flyer that the Santa Cruz Police Department's hate crimes investigator is Sergeant Steve Clark. This is a man who unilaterally confiscated blankets from homeless protesters at City Hall during that same City Hall Sleepers Vigil that went on for 7.5 months, 1996. When asked why he had to do this, or why he was doing this when he could easily take pictures of the blankets if he wanted to show that these criminals were committing a crime by covering up with blankets, as they do under Section 9.36010 of our city's sleeping ban, blanket ban law, the law that three candidates just cannot find their way clear to say, end it, we'll end it, you elect us, we'll end it. I mean, we know the business candidates, Steinau, Quartararo, and Walton, are going to keep it. That's natural. That's what they're likely to do. They are the enemy on this issue. But if our friends are going to stab us in the back, we are in bad shape. Anyway, what Sergeant Clark did was, when he asked why did he have to take those blankets, he turned with a smirk and said to the people that were shivering as he left them behind, "Because I can," leaving them with $162 tickets in their hands. Some of them, of course, he returned to pick them up later, because if you sleep twice in the same night, think of that, you can go to jail for up to 6 months and face a $1,000 fine under the misdemeanor provisions of the sleeping ban law. Again, a law which every single candidate now seems to be hedging on, seems to be saying, oh, that's okay, let's wait on this one for a while. And unfortunately, of course, they don't have to wait. I mean, fortunately for them, they don't have to wait night after night outside.